Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Joel Elston and Alex King. Today is Thursday, July the 11th, 2019. It is 8 a.m. in New York, 5 a.m. in Los Angeles, 1 p.m. in London, 10 p.m. in Sydney, and 9 p.m. in Tokyo, Japan. But wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy, and we are going to do our best, as we do every single day, to help you get into that happier feeling space. Because as I pointed out to my colleagues here before we got started, better is better. Anything that you do to get into a better place is better. Doesn't matter where you are.
Better and better, yep.
Doesn't matter how bad things are, better is better.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to remind ourselves of that. Sometimes it's hard to remember it at all.
That's why sometimes you have to play songs that are conducive to your situation.
Conducive to the situation, what do you mean by that?
Like, for instance, when you said better is better, the song I'm Better came into my head, and it's a song, a new song by Missy Elliott, and it just repeats over and over, I'm better, I'm better, I'm better. And then I was like, oh, that's, and it's so jolly, and it just gets you going in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm. All right. Well, I certainly am an advocate of using music that you prefer, that you like, to get into a better space, because it works really, really well for me. I think Joel actually incorporated into his practice. I'm not 100% sure of that. But.
Well, yeah, I one of the things that I found that it's as bizarre as this may sound, I find, you know, music is, it just as you're saying, has a direct effect on the mood. And I often, for years before I even understood that, I had, you know, very, you know, I had music for certain situations. And like before I'd work out, I'd have some very, you know, hard driving, intense music that sort of got the, you know, you got your blood pumping, and then you could have music at night. I mean, so it actually fits perfectly. It's just vibration of sound. I mean, of, you know, it's vibrational that creates a sound in our interpretation. And one of the things that's mentioned is that a lot of this has to do with what you interpret. And, you know, there's some songs that I don't even know what they mean. They just seem happy to me. it's just like, you know, I've heard, you know, like there's a song by My Chemical Romance called Black Parade. Well, apparently it's a very dark song. I think it's very awesome. I mean, it's very upbeat.
I love that song.
Yeah, they're having a parade, and, you know, and you know, I don't really understand why it's black, but it doesn't matter. It's just a great thing. And it's a very upbeat song to me. And again, I've had people say, well, that's a pretty dark song for you to be listening to. So a lot has to do with your interpretation of what it is. And also on the other hand, there's a song that I'm trying to think of, it's pretty dark, and some of it's pretty negative. And I've actually deleted it off my playlist because I just don't want to, I don't want to bring that into my orbit. I do like really intense songs. I don't want it to be a dark based, you know, music is awesome in many ways, and it can lift your mood. It can also bring you down. I know people that go through breakups, listen to songs. This goes back many years ago. I was on a date with this young lady, and we were driving, and a song came on. She said, oh, can you change that? And I'm like, okay. And I was like, why? And, she said, well, that was my ex-boyfriend. We just broke up song.
Oh.
I said, oh, okay. I said, wow, this is going to be an awesome day.
Yeah, right.
That's a great start to the day. And it pretty much was self-fulfilling after that, but that's a different story.
Way to read the room, Mary.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like, and that's exactly that. So it's just, and, you know, Walt has often discussed, how comedy really gets him in tune with the law of attraction. So, you know.
I think anyone who's watching the podcast gets that, because they can just tell, because every single show we're cracking jokes. So apparently I seem to like comedy.
A little bit.
Just a tad, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that's right. I was just going to say I agree with everything you're saying, of course, but I also wanted to emphasize one point you made, because I thought it was a wonderful point. It's what you like. It's what you prefer. Because everybody's not going to agree on what they prefer. Some people are going to find, you mentioned this one song that it was Black Parade, I think you said it was, that you felt really good about. It just felt really good to you. And I think it was pretty clear that you didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the lyrics. You just liked the music. You liked the beat. You liked the rhythm. You liked the upbeatness of it.
Right. Well, that song also, you know, quick story behind that song, it'll sort of relate to, you know, many, many years ago, when I was driving my boys to school, you know, one went to elementary and one went to middle school, and they had diametrically opposed taste in music, and there was always an argument about what we listened to. So on XM radio, they had the top 10 songs played over and over and over. So we just agreed to listen to that on the way to school. Well, during this period of time, Black Parade from My Chemical Romance was in the top 5. So it would come on, and then my oldest son TJ, who truly, he just would roll his eyes and go, "Oh, I hate this song so bad." And then that became my son's Chris favorite song because TJ hated it so bad. Fast forward many years down the road, when I was, TJ and I were together, he gave me his phone. I was putting in a number and he actually had on his playlist Black Parade by My Chemical Romance. And so the fact that, and I said, "Oh, remember that?" And he goes, "Yeah, actually it's a good memory and I saw my play." So in a similar way, I was when years ago I had a huge bias against Eminem. I really despised Eminem, the singer, and, it gets better. And so as that was going on, I just basically called him, you know, I said, "Okay, it's this guy, you know, it's Vanilla Ice Part 2. After I've got to understand what, I mean, he really is one of the great poets of all time. I mean, he's incredible.
Okay.
And so I have a huge respect for him, but my transition from that went from a, you know, so music can grow, it can change. And your perspective of it can change. But to me, in a bigger law of attraction picture, is the key that you're going on, Walt, is exactly what you're saying. It is your individual interpretation of any event or any song or any show that gives it relevance. That's the key. It's not a, there isn't such thing as a positive song if you're viewing it negatively.
Right.
I'm about to really put a fire extinguisher on the room, so I'll bring it up. One of my clients many, many years ago was a young man who had been sexually abused by a priest for years. And he would go to church, and when he was in the group home, and it took me a while to figure out what was happening, but when there's a song called "This Little Light of Mine" came on, he would literally stand up and just, I mean, start screaming and throwing things and raising all kind of hell. So finally we figure out what happened. You know, part of what would take place is his abuse would take place while the choir was practicing in the background, but he didn't know it,
no.
But he would hear that song. So he related what is probably the most benign little song in the world to a horror song. So again, what you attach to it, and the reason I can bring that up, this young man did one of the most amazing turnaround in his life. He's in medical school now, and is just a great, I would love to do a show with him one day. But my point is, during that period of time in his life, that song was a very negative song, and he may be one of the few people on the planet that ever viewed it as a negative song. It's just benign. But in his world, it was powerfully negative. So we all have a bias or a situation. Sometimes there's music remind me of things that, oh wow, I love that. And it, again, so much of what we attach to music or shows or events are based on our own personal experience and perspective at that time.
And that's why the point I was trying to make, that feeds in beautifully to it. The point I was making was, it's okay. it's perfectly fine for two people to have diametrically opposite opinions about a song. One person loving it, the other person disliking it intensely. It's perfectly okay. Because it's not the song. It's not the song. It's not the music. It's how we feel about it. That's the key thing.
Yeah. And that's what I forget if, well, you and I were talking about this one day, and I think it was off camera, and we were talking about one of my favorite songs to get down to in the morning, and it's called You Can't Win by Michael Jackson, and it's on the Wiz soundtrack. And Walt was like, what? Why would you want to listen to those?
I did.
And I was like, you gotta hear the beat. You gotta hear the music. Like, first of all, it's Michael Jackson. Second of all, like, it's just such a great song. Like, and then he's like, "All right, sing me the lyrics." So I tell him the lyrics, and he's like, "Okay." And I was like, "Well, you can't let that kind of stuff get in your bubble. You just gotta enjoy the song for what it is. Like, it can't be all about the lyrics sometimes."
But my point is, I don't have to enjoy or not enjoy any song. It's right. That's the point. It's preference. Your preference is to enjoy that song, and that's wonderful. And my preference was I could care less, and that's wonderful. They're both acceptable. They're both good.
Right, right.
Well, on a more macro scale in our society, if we could accept that general, that our preferences and opinions and all that, our perspective, perceptions, all of the stuff that's going on is an individual based thing. The lens in which I view the world through is different than what Walt views the lens, you know, the world through. That same, because our lens was developed over years in different directions, you know, that's sort of the basis, I believe, of the angst of our country. Is a failure to accept the other side's lens. Not agree with the other lens. You don't have to agree with the lens.
Right.
But to accept that their lens was formed under a different set of circumstances. If you go to the eye doctor, he's going to figure out what exact lens you need. Some people need the exact opposite lens as another person. So if you switch the glasses, they both would be totally inability. They couldn't see, but their lens has been tailor made for them. So what everything that we've experienced in life has developed these lenses that we look at things and we hear things and we smell things through. And so all of this, there's some people that will have a smell that's like, God, that stinks. Well, that's a great smell. Somewhere along the way, somebody convinced people that Axe, is a great aftershave or cologne. And so many young people bathe in Axe and you smell them going, how can you think that smells good? Smells good? However, apparently they do because they're wearing it. Or, you know, one of the things that really bothers me in the gym is part of this I don't care about. But when I'm with, and it could be a male or female, but often it's female in this case. When some woman is wearing a bunch of makeup, that's her business. I don't care. But when she's rocking some really strong perfume and I'm trying to work out, that is a big turnoff to me. Cause now you're violating my space and now I'm trying to breathe in that. And so again, her perspective is really important to, you know, look and well, and this is positive to me. Well, her cologne is very negative to me. And it's all about a perception. And that's so important that, you know, I wouldn't watch the news, but when I don't watch the news, when I hear people talking and I hear the opinions that they're stating, I'm so frustrated, not at their opinion, at their inability to accept there's another point of view that formed it. You know, I'm opposed to many things but I always will allow, I accept the reason that's even a question is it's formed through a lens that I am not familiar with. And so I can accept that that's a view that's different than mine. And our problem is we cannot accept, you know, I hear all the time, well, this politician is really dumb because he doesn't agree with me. Well, first of all, that politician is not dumb. He or she has that view based on his or her experience, or in a lot of cases, it is a view based on what takes to win the race. It's not even what they really believe.
Yeah, right. That part is the part that, that always caught my attention. That's why I was always interested in politics. Like, wow, people go around saying all these things they don't believe.
I mean, you learn that in high school. You're like, you make promises. It's like, yeah, we're going to have pizza every Friday. Vote for me.
Yeah,
you're not in charge of that. But it sounds good.
Right. One of the short stories I read one time is there's a African American gentleman that was he was the assistant or butler to George Wallace, the racist governor of Alabama. And
interesting
he
job.
Wrote a book. Well, I mean, he wrote a book saying him and the governor were very good friends. The governor referred to him as Mr. Jackson or whatever his name was, and told him after he would do these things, he said, I don't believe this the way I'm saying it, and I apologize to you. It's just what I have to do to be governor of this state. And he defends him and says George Wallace was not the racist that he was painted to be, at least from that person's perspective. I know several people who are in government or had high end government jobs, like, for example, Republicans who really deep down believe we need some form of gun control, but they cannot say it because they will never be elected. Or I know Democrats that want some, you know, that think the abortion stuff's getting too far or too out that. And so you have either side, but their narrative doesn't match, you know, and so they're stuck into a bubble of what is expected of them. And so, you know, the what we believe often has many factors that we don't even take into account.
That's true. I before the show started, I mentioned to Alex that I was really determined today to be focusing on what I prefer because I've been spending too much time focusing on what I don't prefer. And here's an example of it. I was focusing on a conversation I had with somebody on Facebook who was arguing about politics. And I was trying to argue about politics. I just want to talk about LOA. He insisted on talking about politics. And he got really mad at me because I would not stand up in favor of unity. The idea that everybody should be on the same page and have the same idea about issues. And I mean, he was really adamant about it.
Yeah.
He really honestly believed that until we achieve unity, we will never end dissension. And I said, okay, yeah, well, I don't think you're ever going to end dissension. Good luck with that one.
Right?
Which was not going to happen, you know. Divisions are going to exist as long as we have different perspectives. Oh, he wasn't having that. He wasn't having that at all. And I began to realize this is actually a very common belief. It's like you were alluding to a moment ago, Joel, the idea that we have to all believe the same thing in order to solve the country's problems.
Nah, different strokes for different folks.
Well, and I believe the opposite of that. I believe the incredible strength of our country comes from diametrically opposed views. It puts us in a... When Russia or China dictates, okay, this is the state doctrine, here's what we believe, everybody then plays that, and it's not a productive society. It doesn't work that way.
I love
the concept of I wish we all had, you know, totally free college and totally free health care and totally free air. I love that. However, I'm also aware that we can't afford all of that stuff without giving up other stuff. And we need to have a strong military. I don't know how strong a military. I mean, somewhere in the middle of all this is where we usually end up. That one of the things that I think is, and I don't care which side, our country tends to be more productive, again, from my perspective only, when the House and Senate when there's not a, you don't want it all Republican or all Democrat. It's good to have, you know, one side or the other to sort of reel the other side in, because that's when there's balance. And you know, and I think that it's incredible how we set it up for those checks and balances. I think the most destructive times are when we have one party in charge of everything and they can push through everything and send it too far the other side, and then the pendulum comes back. So I love the diversity in our country. I have a couple of friends who have adopted a child, and they're gay. These are two men. They're wonderful, wonderful guys. And however, they're on this big thing. They're wealthy, and so they said, we don't want to move to Alabama. Or no, we want to move to Alabama, which I don't know why. however, they said, but the adoption, they said there's a question of whether the adoption would be recognized in Alabama. And there's a big legal thing over that. And I go, my God, why do you want to go there? There's 37 states. You have $25 million. You can do whatever you want to do. And you want to move to Alabama, it's almost like there's a draw, like a moth to the flame.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly
Instead of focusing on where you don't want to be, there's tons of states that are very neutral or the other way. But and why would you choose a state that's diametrically opposed to what you're doing? I don't want to live next to someone who truly believes my existence is a sin. Now, I'm not saying it's right for them to believe that. I'm just saying I'm not going to go in there and change it and then somehow say, oh, well, don't get offended when I go to Alabama and somebody makes, you know, gay jokes. It's just not the way it works. So, my point is you can find the diversity and if we look for, you know, we have all that, and I think the free market handles a lot of things. You know, eventually, if you believe a certain way, people aren't going to come there. You know, it all works out, but trying to jump in the middle of it and force other things that cause them a problem. So that's why our country is great. It's the fact that, you know, one of my clients is, he is one of seven, and I don't even know the term, but I call him a nuclear scientist because he is, but it's beyond that. I mean, he's one of seven people in the world that holds this freakish, I don't know what it's even, it's way beyond me to explain it, but it's like he deals with like nuclear fusions and stuff like that. And he's one of the smartest people to walk the planet. I think I remember him saying his IQ has been measured at 182.
Woo!
So just incredibly smart. Has the least common sense of any human I know.
Yeah, sometimes you have one and you lose the other.
He doesn't get sarcasm. He works for our government. And he has a person, this is a true story, it's at the Pentagon. He has his own person who follows him because he forgets where he parks every day. He has his own person assigned to him to help him with things. I find that fascinating.
Mm. Yep.
So, it's, when we do that, when we look at it from that perspective, I'm loving how we do things where we accept other people's position. I don't want to create the anti-law of attraction or the wrong side of the law of attraction by going around enforcing my beliefs on other people. You want to believe what I believe, that's awesome. You want to disagree with me, that's great. I'm not going to spend a lot of energy on either side of it. Because it is attracting. That's that energy that we're trying to do. It does the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important to understand that.
The other thing that I've noticed a lot, another reason I'm trying to move away from all this, is among people who take extreme stances like, oh, we all have to be unified on the same belief, is that they also seem to have another tendency in common, and that is they all believe that they are victims of whatever the opposition says to them, about their position or whatever. So that, you know, if they stand for one side of an issue and somebody else stands for the other side of the issue, and that somebody else says something in a really passionate way about how wrong to hold that position, they have no choice but to be angry at that person. They are not in control of their own emotions. They are dependent upon the emotions of others. And that tendency seems to be almost 100%. I say almost because I leave open the possibility that maybe there's an exception to the rule, but so far, as far as I can see, everybody who I've been interacting with who has expressed some idea that we have to gang up and we have to force our views on everybody else, at the same time believes that they are not able to control how they react when somebody on the other side says something they don't like. It's amazing.
Yeah. I want to bring back the point of that Joel was talking about lenses, and that reminds me of a video I was watching. It was an experiment based on privilege, and it basically showed how – I'll explain the experiment, but it basically showed how the advantages you had in life that other people haven't had shape who you are, and it's based on nothing that you have personally done. So, for instance, the example was it was a line, and many people have probably seen this video, and it was a bunch of kids in a straight line, and of all different shapes, sizes, colors, women, men, and everybody. And so the guy goes, okay, we're going to all race for this $100 bill. And he said, but before we do, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. And if your answer is yes to the question, take two steps forward. So the first question, I believe, was, do you live in a two-parent household? And a lot of the white people took two steps forward. And then, did you go to a private school? Two steps forward. And, you know, it kept going on and on like that. And then they're like, stop and look around and see who's around you. And it's like, and then he reminded him, like, because you are experiencing life through a certain lens based on the things you have been given in life. This is called privilege. You have not earned any of this. And I want to say, and this is the funny part that got me, is like, you will see that most of the black people are in the back, and they would probably still, if this race was even, they would still smoke you and win this $100. So take the time out after we've finished this race and talk to the people around you and discuss the differences that you have and try to experience another person's lens. And I thought that was a very powerful experiment that I saw. And I just wanted to share that because I feel like it goes with exactly what we were talking about.
Well, it also raises a question in my mind. Well, it raises a lot of questions. But the first question that it raises in my mind is, if shaped by our experiences, and I agree that we are, to what degree can we change our perception about our experiences?
I mean, you can change your perception on anything. So that was the point of the experiment, is how you look at it and how other people see it. So maybe you need to step in someone else's shoes and see from the other side, and you get a whole different perspective when you do that.
Yeah, that's one possible way to react. There are a lot of different ways to look at it. There are a lot of different ways to experience what they experienced. And to me, the biggest challenge and the biggest exciting thing in life is to see if I could be in that kind of a situation, whether it be a contrived experiment like that or really anything that I interact with, and change the way I'm going to respond to it. That's what I was talking about this morning when I said I am going to start paying more attention to what I prefer and stop paying more attention to what I don't prefer. Because I've never done that on a regular basis. Well, I can't say that's true. I mean, since doing this podcast, I've actually done it quite a bit. But in my past life, I didn't do that at all. I really believed I was stuck in whatever emotional framework my context told me I had to be in. I mean, to make that change was a big change. Now I'm actually believing, well, hey, yeah, I really can do that. So now I'm faced with, well, I'm so sick of focusing on stuff I don't like. I don't like the results that come out of it. I don't like how it feels. I don't like how I end up attracting stuff I don't want. I am really, really determined now that I'm going to shift. And so I guess my question was kind of tongue-in-cheek, because the answer is yes, of course I can shift. Like, of course I can make that change.
Yeah.
But it's also a bit of a challenge. It's like, you know what? Am I going to go through my day letting those things that I don't like continue to decide what it is I'm going to focus on?
No.
And when I woke up this morning, I said, hello, I'm done with that. I'm done with that.
Exactly. Tell them why you're mad. Well,
yeah. And that's the choice we have every single day.
Yep.
That's what's so cool. Every single day we get the same options all over again. And we can change and we can choose differently.
Yes.
And that's the law of attraction. It you can, you know, if you're the danger is when you view the, like the example of Alex just was speaking about, when you view the, okay, because I have, we all have been dealt a different, I know some people that are very debilitated that were dealt a very incredible hand. I know some very wealthy families that their children are train wrecks because their wealth was debilitating. They weren't required to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I know some wildly successful people that came from nowhere. Yeah. And fought and struggled and have become wildly successful. I look at Oprah Winfrey, who's an incredible mentor mindset I love to, look at and emulate. She was in the very back of that lineup too and went far beyond where anyone else were. I can argue all sides of that. Not argue. Yeah. I can explain all sides of it. I know children that collegiate is our local fancy school, college prep. It's high school here. It's 40 grand, 50 grand a year to go to. It's full. And one of the kids that I he's a young man now that works with, and he, regardless of why I'm working with him, he said, he feels debilitated by collegiate on some level. He said, you're not allowed to fail at collegiate. He said, I realized about the 11th grade that, you know, that assignment I put some effort into gets about the same grade as the assignment that I didn't get an effort in. Even if I don't do it, all my mom has to do is call up here and raise hell, and then I'll still get a B in the class. And it was because they want the 50 grand a year. You can't fail at collegiate when somebody's paying 50 grand a year to be there. It just doesn't work. And so the idea that he had to fight or struggle or push or gain knowledge. So when he ends up at a university, that is demanding some academic, you know, effort, his mommy calls up there and says, told the professor that, you know, you're unfair to my son because you gave him a D. And he goes, I didn't give him anything, ma'am. He barely earned the D. He was a point away from having an F.
Yeah.
And she called the one of the regents she knew and they said, ma'am, you've got to stop. It's time. And he literally was debilitated by this incredible, most people's advance in life. He was running the 40-yard dash starting at the 30-yard mark and wasn't doing as well as people at starting the thing. So within that, I tell both sides of that. When I have some people who have had less of an opportunity, say, well, I didn't have that opportunity. Well, yes, you're right, but hopefully you can have your lens set. There are no limits to anything except the ones we put around. And that's the important thing. So I find the people that take both sides of that commercial or that little short video you're talking about and use it again, they could use it the wrong way.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I think this is something that's important that I want you to grasp, that you are able to, not like you people, I mean you, our audience.
What do you mean you people?
But no, you people, our audience to grasp is that individuality, that ability to just, you know, your lens has been formed. I want you to view the lens the way you, I want you to fight for what you believe in, but I also want us to accept, not agree with, but accept that other lenses were developed. One of the, and we can flip this because I don't want to stand too much on this sort of in the edge of negative here, but, one of the things, I have an NFL player that I work with and he is one of the ones one of the many NFL players that kneels at the national anthem. Mm-hmm. And he truly doesn't understand why people are so angry with him. He said, I'm not disrespecting the flag. I'm disrespecting the way my race has been treated by the police. That's his view.
Facts.
Well, would you have a mother whose son 2 months ago was blown up while fighting a war, defending her perception of the flag? She sees it differently. Mm-hmm. I would love for both sides to see what the other side is seeing, why they get so mm-hmm. adamant. But it doesn't come across in a discussion. There's mm-hmm. people that have lost family members in defense of the country who view people kneeling as spitting in my face. You're spitting in my dead son's face. Mm-hmm. And that's something that they get adamant about. So they're never going to be able to accept the lens that the other person is viewing. But when we can calm it down to a non-emotional state mm-hmm. and then say, look, I want this. I really, really want this to – our beauty is our diversity. Our growth comes from people not accepting the status quo. Our growth comes from that. We want to push the envelope, and then you want the other side to keep that envelope in check. It's a beautiful system when it's allowed to be accepted. What, back in the day politically, we certainly had a lot of debate, at least it seems to me that we had more of an ability to disagree and be civil than we mm-hmm. do now. We don't have that too much. And social media contributes to that because what happens is when you get a group of people that have the ability to sort of all get together and tout their own conspiracy theories and you know, there are literally people to sort of light it up, literally people with all their heart that believe that the earth is flat and it's a conspiracy.
Oh my God.
They believe this. They yeah. really believe it.
Yep.
Yes. Flat earthers. Yes.
Yeah.
It's yeah. true.
I mean, it's amazing that exists, and it's like, what, I'm not grasping why you'd believe it, but instead of, I just like the fact that we got those folks out there. Okay, good job, guys. I mean, wow, wow, you know.
Yeah, right.
It's better than me, but I understand.
I can't remotely get to where they're at, but I without any investigation, by the way, I've never tried to figure, I've always, for the longest time, thought it was a tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic, sort of we don't really believe this is sort of a joke thing until I find out, no, there's people that really,
no,
really
do. Are like, yeah. in videos, like, near tears, like, yo, the earth is flat, like, calm down. First of all, the earth was really flat. The cats would have knocked everything off by now. So right there.
And even beyond that, if the earth is flat, how in the world is it affecting me? It's not.
Right,
if it's round or it's a sphere, or if it's I'm waiting for the triangle shape Earth theory to come out soon. Something, but you know, it at the end of the day, we have to accept that. And you know, one of the things that I was hoping to mention, and I'll tie it in. This week, I have been on. You know, I'm always reading books and always finding new things. There's one that I'm loving right now that mm-hmm. I want to share with our audience and sort of bring it to the equation. There's one called Stress Less, Accomplish More, Meditation for Extraordinary Performance. Mm-hmm. And this, the author's name is Emily Fletcher. Mm-hmm. And I actually ran across her when one of my friends who's a public speaker, was telling me, he said, you know, And I thought, okay, another meditation lady. Yay. You know, we have plenty of those.
Dime a dozen. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But she literally has a sort of combined mindfulness, meditation, and manifestation into a morning, a two time a day ritual. And the meditation she's using is sort of a mantra meditation. And for those, everybody I ever talked to at some point said, I can't meditate. I'm saying, okay.
Yep. That's
me. You can. Yeah, you can.
I know I can, but you can't.
Yeah, exactly. That's everybody's reaction. But the reality is, if you sit down, it's impossible to do it wrong. It's just literally impossible not to do it right. Mm-hmm. And so, if you do it, so part of the process is, and I encourage you to look at the book and maybe even attend. I'm probably going to attend one of her courses because I really am that into it. You start off in a mindfulness set, and that's simply taking a minute to just sort of sit down, just get where you're at, live in the power of now. Right now, I'm sitting down, I feel this, the temperature of the room is this, my heart's beating, and take about a minute to sort of get focused on where you're at. Mm-hmm. And then for the next 14 minutes, you close your eyes, you're sitting straight up, and you utter a sound internally. You don't say it out loud, you just think this sound. It's called a mantra. It doesn't matter what it is, but it needs to be nonsensical. Or one that like om, the sound om, you know, just om, om, and just think that over and over for 14 minutes.
So wait,
you don't say it at all. You just think it. Now, in the middle of this, what everybody thinks they're doing wrong, after about a minute, you're going to start going, huh. I wonder what's in the dog's food. Let me read that. Yeah. Nope, need to get back over here. Then the moment you find yourself sort of over there, say, nope, back to om. And then you start thinking om again. It's like, did I pay that bill?
Thanks.
I wonder what Ross and Rachel would be doing if they were actually now. And then all of these thoughts, and then you keep going back to home, come back to home. Now, what happens with those, the point is, and that's where most people lose meditation, say their mind won't work. There's a point of that, and it is actually working. Now, as you do it, those thoughts become less and less. But if you keep at it, there's a moment that when you do this meditation, when you're doing this mantra meditation, by the way, this is a form of transcendental meditation they have a trademark, so you can't say it's transcendental meditation, but it's sort of transcendental meditation. And if you say the mantra over.
It's low key transcendental.
Yeah,
it's very great marketing, folks.
Yeah. Now, it, you don't need to hold your fingers in a certain way. You don't need to cross your legs in some you know, guru setting. You don't need to wear yoga pants. You don't need to.
I'm not doing it.
They're optional. In fact, pants are optional entirely. I mean, that's all up to you. But, you know, just put a towel down if you need that. Anyway,
pants are optional.
Yeah, and so within that, this process of meditation, there's this moment where you just feel this, they call it the bliss chemicals, where dopamine, it's not a high, but it's this amazing feeling. You feel it, literally feel it in your brain. Maybe not the first time you do it, maybe not the second time you do it. And now she gets into great detail of why this process works and what it does. She basically states that there's a certain amount of adaptation. There you go. We have an ability to adapt to life. Almost like a gas tank. You wake up in the morning and you have this gas tank full of the ability to adapt whatever life throws at you. Then as the day goes on, we sort of burn. And so like at the end of the day, you know, you're being set off by anything, you know, or it might be the middle of the day, or you may start off your day and then use it all up. So the idea that this process allows you to replenish that ability, it gives you more energy, it gives you, it's a great reducer in stress. This is this, there's a lady that had, that one of the case studies she talks about, is this lady had a severe case of diagnosed anxiety disorder. It was verified through high, she ran around with like quadruple the amount of cortisol levels. She was constantly stressed. Her adrenals were constantly fatigued.
Wow.
And she started this process, and through blood tests verifying where they're at, you know, using, you know, high estrogen, you know, levels that which come out from stress, super low, you know, dopamine and you know, all these chemicals, the opposite of where they need to be. After 1 month of doing that, her cortisol levels were on the low end. The rest of her Kemp markers were normalized, and she did nothing but change this process. And there's Parkinson patients that report, and again, this is not a medical statement. If you're have Parkinson's, you have to talk to your doctor, blah, all that disclaimer stuff. However, there's people that with Parkinson's that have done this that have been able to greatly reduce, if not stop, their medication. Because this is something doctors are now buying up. There's a lot of studies taking place. So I really encourage people. The book is called Stress Less, Accomplish More, Meditation for Extraordinary Performance. Emily Fletcher, I've listened to it on Audible. I listen to a ton of stuff. So I get a lot of ideas that way, but there's few things that I run across that really hits me in a certain way. And I've added this routine I've replaced my morning routine with this, and I do an afternoon. And I find it to be incredibly beneficial.
Wow. That's a great endorsement. And
to add the manifestation point on the end, to add the law of attraction piece, and where she sold me and you know, hook, line, and sinker and everything, is you do the manifestation, the law of attraction exercise at the end of your meditation. When the body is flooded with positive bliss-like chemicals, now you're in tune with you are emotionally, the vibration you're putting off is exactly what we're seeking. So when I have people, this is the law of attraction connection. So when we have people who are, how do I get what I really want? This is a method to vibrate on the level that you want to vibrate on, and then apply the manifestation while you're in this mindset. It becomes an incredibly powerful tool.
I love that on a number of levels. One level that I love it on is much earlier in the podcast, Joel, you were talking about how politics used to be much more civil. There was a greater level of civility than there is now. And I think that really points to what's really going on. People talk about how it's the dissension. I say, no, it's really actually how we're reacting to it. And this process you're describing is a wonderful way to help oneself change the way we understand what's going on with things that we don't like, such as politics. And I'm not limiting it to politics. It could be almost anything, really. But the point is, if there's something going on that you're finding yourself, you're like I was talking about this morning, I want to get away from focusing on stuff I don't like. Well, if you're finding there's stuff that you don't like, there's a great process that Joel just described for helping you get away from focusing on what you don't like. If you don't like the way somebody else is talking to you about some sort of an issue, well, try doing a little meditation using the OM method. Yeah. And you can get yourself in that good feeling place. And this is the critical part. And then when you're doing the LOA portion at the end, make sure you're describing what you want and not what you don't want. Like, I don't want any more of that terrible person saying these terrible things to me. No, don't go there. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Go to what result you want instead. Mm-hmm. What's the actual positive way of expressing? Yeah.
She literally says exactly that, where you get to the point at the end when you do the manifestation piece. It's basically what we talk about every week. Mm-hmm. But what she says is you visualize, you feel exactly what you're trying to feel, what you want. You feel as if you live in this mindset that you feel that you have already obtained this. And, This is awesome.
That's cool.
We're in this mindset. When this is a hat to get the brain to produce the chemicals, which puts off the emotional vibration of what you're trying to attract. The one of the things, and I almost am hesitant to say this because it could be really coincidence, but you know how coincidences are. So, I've been doing this for, you know, about 3 or 4 weeks, and I've you know, financially, I never, you know, I'm in a great place financially, and I do things in a, you know, I don't worry about money anymore. I have plenty of money, and it's not a big, massive focus. But as I'm always sort of, you know, striving, and I always have goals, and always, so I've had a number that years ago would have been a ridiculous number to be able to obtain sort of in monthly income. And so I've, you know, and said, you know, but not that I don't have, I have an abundance now, but I would like to. So this month, you know, I've had a number for a long time that I put to a point I didn't think was really possible. Well, on the 11th, on the 11th of July, I just booked enough stuff that will put me about 15% over that number for the month.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. And it was, and again, I'm not saying this meditation did that. I'm just saying it is part of what I've incorporated into that. Mm-hmm. And I find it ironic with me starting this that now, and again, on the same token, I had an abundance before this happened. I have an abundance after this happens, and I will continue to have an abundance, and that will keep coming in. But, but I just find the timing of it pretty amazing. And, you know, in part of what I want to do is I've been working or mentally working on my one, you know, a few books, and I've part of my meditation has been my thought is I want to get these books done. I procrastinate. I go in a million different directions. My ADD takes me on a whirlwind circus tour of everything you can think of, but writing a book when I'm trying to write the book. So I've started adding that equation. So in the last month or the last 3 weeks, a few weeks, I've gotten, you know, probably 250 pages written of one of my books.
Nice.
So I mean, I'm seeing some good results, and again, it's you know, our skeptical people out there will be like, oh, well, Joel, this has nothing to do with anything. You know, it's the only
thing. I think there's too many in our audience like that, actually. Most of our audience actually will be accepting of this, but there are a lot of other people outside of our audience who feel that way. Yeah.
Right. And so, when you hear that, and again, I try to put that out there as part of the process, but I love, because the biggest questions that we keep getting asked are, how do I physically do this? How do you do, because you want it, but you don't want it too much. And she addresses this again in the book about, you desperately want it will never get you anything because you're our desperate state of mind versus putting it out there and living. So she addresses the law of attraction piece exactly as we talk about. Mm-hmm. Then she adds the putting the law of attraction in my mind. These are my words, right? Starting in a mindfulness place, you get ready for the meditation. The meditation literally changes the chemistry of your body. Where you're emotionally at a different level, then you're able to be vibrating emotionally on a certain to get what you want. Then you plug in what your desires are, by believing that you're already there. And it's a perfect way to implement the law of attraction. While the title is more about meditation, it is really a roadmap to effectively use the law of attraction.
That's very cool. I also have to ask the usual questions whenever there's a meditation modality going on. So you say you do it twice a day. How much time do you spend on it?
You 1 minute on the mindfulness piece, 14 minutes on the meditation, and a minute or two on the manifestation at the end.
And is there a particular time of day? Is it first thing in the morning, last thing before you go to bed, or does it matter?
One of the things that she says, and I love how she said that, if you're asking for the perfect scenario, you get up, you do it before you know, right after the bathroom trip, you sit down and you do it before you have coffee, before you do anything else. Then you do it again after your lunch digest. You don't want to do it right after you eat because there would be a tendency to get, you know, you get sleepy right there. But like in a perfect world, you would do it at 6 a.m. and then 2 p.m. Now, she also says, and the reason for the 2 p.m. is you don't want to wait till too late in the afternoon because you're trying to get that energy, the ability to adapt to what's going on around you and not let stress overload. So 2 p.m., this can be done, and again, in a perfect world, you're sitting on a, your back straight, your feet are on the ground, you're in a darkened room or a lightly lit room and there's very little distraction. Or you can do it in a busy airport, or you can do it where, you know, don't try to put parameters. Do you want optimal conditions or do you want to be able to do it? It is effectively done it in airports. It's really a great technique that, you know, her point is do it. There's optimal conditions to do it in, but never not do it because the conditions are less than optimal. That's the key.
Yes.
I think that is important. In fact, personally, I kind of like the challenge sometimes with a process, particularly a new process like this that I hadn't done before, of can I do this in non-optimal conditions? Like, can I do this when my wife is watching a television show that I absolutely despise? Can I actually focus my attention on this? And sometimes I can. Sometimes I have to just close the door. I mean, I just can't block it out. But there are times when I will take on the challenge, and for moments at a time, I will actually turn off that background noise, whatever it is. And I think to myself, wow, I did it. I actually did it. I turned it off. In my mind, that way, I mean, it was still there, but I didn't hear it. Cool. So you can play it that way too.
You know, yeah, and exactly. One of the things that I have that I really have felt is such a good mindset to me is I can always throw the I have some noise canceling headphones. I don't have to have sound on, but I can just put the headphones on, which dampens some background noise if there's like this morning. And I have freakishly good hearing. So I can get in tune with, you know, something, then it can become an irritant. So in my bathroom, in my downstairs bathroom, apparently I'm having a little internal toilet drip. So I'm sitting there, it's dead silent, I'm hearing drip, drip. Now, it's no big deal until I realized it was there. And now I had to get up and say, okay, I'm going to shut that door. I'm going to put on my headphones, not because it's just that got my attention. And I wasn't going to let that go. So I needed to understand that. So I stopped and, you know, refocused and did that. But again, I could have sat there and fought through it, or I could just either way, but I agree with you, Walt. There's time to, you know, but if I'm prepared for it, if I'm in the airport and you know, I'm not anticipating everybody's going to get quiet for me, so I can still, you know, sit there and do that. But that's why I love this technique. So again, I don't often really, I usually take bits and pieces from everything I learn, but I am really, really impressed with this, and I'm really impressed with the law of attraction component that's attached to this. It is really big here.
Yeah, I can see that, and for good reason. That's a very cool package that she's put together, and you know, more power to her for doing that. We only have a couple minutes left. I want to make sure I get our announcements in. If you are not yet a subscriber, look at the kind of information you get, and it's different every single episode. We do 5 episodes a week, and you can get subscribed and get all of them free coming to your device every single day that we do them, and it's very simple to do. Just go to the homepage of our website, loatoday.net, and follow the directions at the top of the page, and within moments you will be subscribed, and all of our good shows will be coming to you every single day that we publish them. And also feel free to check us out on YouTube if you want to see what we look like as we're talking about this stuff. I mean, Joel, actually, he doesn't show his face because I won't even go there. But
we're trying to keep things positive, Walt.
That's right. But no, seriously, if you want to see what we look like and maybe even follow us on the live stream, you know, come to YouTube and subscribe there. I always let Alex describe how to do this because she does it better. So how do they subscribe and follow us on YouTube, Alex?
Well, you take yourself on down to YouTube and you go to search LOA Today podcast videos. And once you've seen our smiling faces, you will underneath it, actually, no, above it, you will hit the subscribe button. And next to the subscribe button, there's a little bell, and once you hit that, you will be notified every time we are live.
All right, there we go. And before we part company for the day, Joel, you gave us this wonderful process that I'm definitely going to try out. Does this process have a name? I mean, we know it. We can't call it the Transcendental Meditation thing because that's trademark, but does it have its own name?
Well, this is her thing. She's the one that came up with making the mindfulness and the meditation with the manifestation. So it is her, it's called the Z technique.
The Z technique. Okay.
Or Ziva meditation.
Okay.
Ziva meditation or Z technique meditation.
I think I like Ziva better because if I call it the Z technique, I'm going to fall asleep.
Facts.
There you go.
And we're trying to avoid that. Although that happens too when you're trying to meditate. So you got to kind of go with the flow and not worry about it. But thanks for sharing. That's a great technique. I really appreciate that. That was kind of an unexpected bonus for today's show. So thank you, Joel. Appreciate that so much. Thank you to
we'll talk about it next week and see if you try it, we'll see how it works.
Yeah, well, let's do that. Let's compare some notes and find out do we have any kind of results to report. And any listeners who want to come to the live stream and tell us their results, we'd be happy to include you as well. So by all means, let's do that. So thank you to you guys. Thank you to our live stream listeners. Thank you especially to our podcast listeners as well. And we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.